This is America's Roundtable from Washington, D.C., an initiative of the U.S.-based think tank International Leaders Summit in partnership with Lancer Broadcasting Corporation and Supertalk Mississippi Media. Thank you for joining us on America's Roundtable. I'm Joel Adensami, your co-host, joined by economist Natasha Serdorch, co-founder of International Leaders Summit and the Jerusalem Leaders Summit.
America's Roundtable guests include leading voices from business, government, media, energy, technology, healthcare, and the broad policy arena. Subscribe to America's Roundtable on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. Visit America's Roundtable at americasrt.com. We invite donors and advertisers to reach us by visiting our website, americasrt.com. Welcome to America's Roundtable.
Good morning. It is Saturday, and this weekend on America's Roundtable from Washington, D.C., we are truly honored to have a principal leader joining us from Jerusalem, Israel. Chris Mitchell is the CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief based in Jerusalem, and Chris Mitchell first began reporting on the Middle East in the mid-1990s. Mr. Mitchell has traveled extensively, including the more difficult places impacted by conflicts and war, and there are very few Western journalists that have a deep understanding of Israel within the Middle East and the challenges and opportunities the people in the region face in the 21st century. And for our listeners, we encourage you to consider viewing CBN News, The Jerusalem Dateline, aired on America's cable stations. And Chris Mitchell is an author of excellent books, including ISIS, Iran, and Israel, What You Need to Know About the Current Mideast Crisis and the Coming Mideast War, published in 2016. But relevant for today. And without any further delay, a very good morning to you, Chris, and welcome once again to America's Roundtable.
Good morning, Chris, and good afternoon in Jerusalem.
Yeah, good morning, Natasha and Joel. Great to be with you.
Chris, the city of Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip remains the only area in Gaza where terrorist group Hamas is cowardly hiding, with some 130 Israeli hostages, including Americans, that are still held captive over 160 days. The reports are relaying that there are around 1.4 million Palestinians sheltering in Rafah. Hamas is using 130 Israeli hostages and 1.4 million people as human shields. Mm-hmm. Chris, you have been in contact with generals of the Israel Defense Forces. What are they saying about the Hamas numbers? And what are the next steps to free the hostages and eliminate Hamas?
Well, Natasha, I think Rafah seems to be the epicenter right now of the battle to eliminate Hamas as a major threat on Israel's southern border. It's estimated that four of the 24 battalions of Hamas are still remain in Rafah, that 20 of them have been degraded or defeated in other places in northern and central Gaza. So this is the last bastion of Hamas. And Israel has been saying for weeks that it needs to go into Rafah to be able to eliminate Hamas as a threat on its southern border, to capture the remaining leaders, which they believe Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed Deif, those are number one and number two leaders of Hamas, as well as the over 130 hostages. Tragically, some of them have already been executed. That it has to do this. And this is where the United States and the Israelis have been at loggerheads for several weeks, whether or not Israel can go in there, defeat Hamas while protecting the civilians that have gone there. And as you mentioned, Hamas is using these more than a million people as human shields, and as well as the hostages. So this is really where Israel feels it needs to make its last effort to defeat Hamas. And that's why it's so important. Many people here believe that the United States needs to stand with Israel and really finish the job and finish this war so they can defeat Hamas.
Chris, it appears that there is a strong correlation between the results of the presidential Democratic primary races in Michigan and Minnesota and Biden's foreign policy as it relates to Israel. And according to CBS News, and I quote, approximately 45,000 Minnesota Democrats voted for uncommitted instead of incumbent President Joe Biden during the presidential primary, unquote. And in fact, one of five Democrats in Minnesota voted uncommitted. And another hotspot for the Biden campaign came from Michigan, when more than 100,000 Michiganders voted uncommitted in the Democratic primary there, 13% of the Democratic electorate. And that specific endeavor in Michigan was led by Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who has made no qualms about her anti-Israel rants. And actually, in November of 2023, she was censured in the U.S. Congress. And with the two states, Michigan and Minnesota, raising concerns for Biden's presidential campaign, it appears that the Biden administration is taking a shift and placing Israel at risk. In a span of less than a week, the United States first adopted and presented a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza at the UN Security Council, and then rather than vetoing a resolution from China and Russia, it basically abstained from the resolution, which further undermined Israel. Some are calling it America's betrayal of Israel. Chris, from your vantage point in Jerusalem, how are Israeli leaders, Israeli Americans, and from your interaction with Americans, how are they responding to this change, the first time since 1948 that America has appeared to turn its back on Israel at a prominent global forum at a pivotal moment in history?
Well, you described it quite well. I was sitting down yesterday with former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, and he feels the same thing personally. And he was describing the mood and the reaction of Israelis, that it, for them, it felt much like a betrayal to isolate Israel right now at a time of its greater need. He commented that what happened at Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, in a sense, took a victory lap after that abstention by the United States, traveled to Tehran to meet with Iranian leaders. And so probably back in 2016, the United States did something similar. Resolution, I believe, 2334, where they abstained on a resolution that recognized that really there was no Jewish sovereignty or claim to the old city of Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount and the Western Wall. So it was perceived over here as isolating Israel, as abandoning Israel. And so it was a very, very serious step by the United States. And I would say it was progressive as well. A few weeks ago, there was a U.S. intelligence report that seemed to imply that the government of Benjamin Netanyahu was shaky and that it wasn't gaining the support of the Israeli people. From our perspective, that was untrue. Later on, we heard that speech by Senator Schumer on the Senate floor that called for a change in government, and that Benjamin Netanyahu had, quote unquote, lost his way. And so this abstention by the United States is the latest in a series of steps that seem to continue to isolate and come against Israel, and in specifically the Netanyahu government, at a time of its greatest need. The United States, Israel needs the diplomatic backing of the United States in international form. It needs ammunition and weapons to finish the job in Gaza, and not only in Gaza, but looking forward to perhaps a much larger escalation in the north with Hezbollah. So that's exactly how people felt over here, a betrayal and an abandonment of the Jewish people. And as some people have noted, Genesis 12:3 says, 2 and 3 says, those that bless Israel will be blessed. And some concern shared by many others is it puts America at risk to stand against Israel especially during a time of its greatest need.
Right. Chris, it is very disappointing also to follow Western media, such as BBC and much of America's mainstream media, that continues to misinform their viewers about terrorist group Hamas, the history of Gaza Strip and Judea and Samaria. And these deceitful reportings are a major cause for a waning support for Israel in America and Europe. And when we think about the sides of this war, a sovereign state of Israel against terrorist group Hamas, which is supported by Iran, the state sponsor of terrorism, it is very clear that it is Hamas that needs to be condemned by all reasonable people, including the mainstream media, lest we want Hamas members roaming free among us in the US and Europe. Chris, the unconditional surrender of Hamas and release of all hostages can stop the war immediately. The only party which is favoring war is Hamas. Why is the media not putting pressure on Hamas instead of Israel?
It's a great question, Natasha, and this has been part of the strategy of Hamas for many, many years. It's not the first time that Hamas has attacked Israel on October 7th, but certainly by far the greatest. You could go back to 2008-9 when they attacked Israel, 2012, 2014, 2021. Part of their strategy is to use their own population as human shields to attract sympathy of Western governments. But complicit in that is the media that seems to put Israel at as the villain and not Hamas, who starts the war. They fire missiles from civilian areas and into civilian areas. Both of those are war crimes. But they have a strategy by using the Western media to a large extent. They hide behind their civilians. So when Israel goes in, tragically, you know, some Palestinians are killed. And in the meantime, Israel tries to do what it can to protect civilians. John Spencer, who's a military historian, did an excellent article in Newsweek where he noted that the Israeli IDF does something that few, if any, militaries have ever done in history. They telegraph their military operations. Right. They send text messages, they make phone calls, they drop leaflets, all in an attempt to tell the Palestinian people to get out of harm's way. Hamas, on the other hand, does what it can to maintain those people in harm's way. So when there are civilian casualties, and some of these numbers coming out of Gaza are, we believe, quite inflated, that evokes sympathy. The images go into the Western media. They affect policy, and that's where you see the governments, people change their minds, and also in social media, that has a huge impact on public opinion. So whether it's on Twitter or many of the TikTok and many other social media platforms, but all driven by a policy and a strategy by Hamas to do exactly what happened for the last 6 to 7 months.
Chris, in 2016, your publisher released a book that you author titled ISIS, Iran, and Israel, What You Need to Know About the Current Mideast Crisis and the Coming Mideast War. And we encourage our listeners to really seek out that book by visiting Amazon and other key book sites as well. And you warn readers that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, not just to annihilate Israel, but to destroy the West, Europe, and the United States, which it states as the big Satan. In fact, in light of the terrorist attacks carried out by ISIS-K, which is the Islamic State Khorasan, which refers to a historical region that includes parts of present-day Iran, Afghanistan, and broader Central Asia, this terror group was responsible for the suicide attack on Kabul Airport on August 26, 2021, killing 13 U.S. soldiers and 170 Afghans trying to flee following the Taliban takeover after the Biden administration's chaotic withdrawal of Afghanistan. And we just witnessed what happened in Moscow with ISIS-K attacking a site, a concert hall, 140 confirmed dead with 143 missing. And we also realized that in the Wall Street Journal in 2017, and I quote a piece that says, as the U.S. military campaign against Islamic State winds down in the Middle East, the Trump administration is turning its focus to what it sees as a bigger threat, Iran, unquote. So as we look at what transpired during the Trump administration in really eliminating much of the ISIS-K or ISIS groups there and reducing their capabilities to wage war against us or individuals in the region. And we look at the open border policy of Biden here. What are your thoughts and from the lessons of October 7 as well that America faces today? Are we at greater risk in America than we were a few years ago?
One of the things I keep hearing over and over here is the theme that, you know, Israel may have been the attack on October 7th, but it's coming to America. And that's with the open border, with the millions of people who have come in illegally, with and part of those have been terrorists that have been captured. But we don't know how many have been able to infiltrate into America. So I think America is at great risk right now of a kind of terror attack that happened in Moscow or it happened on October 7th. And it's urgent, first of all, for believers around the world, especially in the United States, to be praying like a Psalm 91 prayer over America, that it would be protected in spite of these terror cells that may have already been established in Israel. As you mentioned, Israel may be the little Satan, but America is the great Satan, and Iran has a strategy to defeat Israel, but also to defeat the United States and the West. And the other theme I've heard here is this is really not a battle just for America. It's a battle for Western civilization. And America being the key ally of Israel, the strategy is to undermine the support for Israel, to make believers question whether or not we should stand with Israel, using the media manipulation by Hamas, the images coming out of Gaza, not recognizing the challenges that the IDF and Israel have in fighting this kind of urban warfare, and not only just an urban warfare, but tunnel warfare at the same time. Several weeks ago, we had the opportunity to go inside one of these terror tunnels inside Khan Yunis, mm-hmm. one of the large cities in Israel. And I was struck by the length of it. It was over a half a mile long. And one of a series of tunnels that that in cumulative have about almost 500 miles of tunnels throughout all of Gaza, yeah. larger than the London Underground. I was struck by the length of it, by the more than $1 billion that it took to construct these. And they were ubiquitous. The general that we was giving us a briefing said these tunnels were in supermarkets, mosques, homes, schools, and it's all part of the web that Hamas has been building there for about 17 years. And so the West needs to understand how difficult it is for the IDF to be fighting this kind of urban warfare, and like including tunnel warfare. It's like going three-dimensional warfare. And yet in the midst of this, they're trying to do what they can to protect Palestinian civilians. And yet the overall point is America's at risk, and we need to be praying, and we need to be alert to what the enemy wants to do, undermine the last bastion of freedom and democracy in the West.
Right. On America's Roundtable, Joel and I recently hosted Kingdom of Bahrain's ambassador to the U.S., Ambassador Al Khalifa, and he shared about Bahrain's commitment to the U.S.-Bahrain partnership. Bahrain's hosting the U.S. Navy's 5th Fleet mm-hmm. and the headquarters of U.S. Naval Forces Central Command in Bahrain. And Bahrain was the only Arab state joining America with a coalition of like-minded countries to safeguard a major trade route and conduct necessary strikes against Houthi targets in Yemen in response to the Houthis' continued attacks against international and commercial shipping and naval vessels transiting the Red Sea. Houthis are also supported by Iran. Mm-hmm. Chris, America and Israel have allies among Arab countries and primarily among the signatories of the successful Abraham Accords, such as Bahrain, United Arab Emirates. That was a major accomplishment of the Trump administration. What are your thoughts about a major partnership of these countries for prosperity and peace in the Middle East and against Iran, as well as the role of America's next administration?
Well, I think that we need to be continuing to develop those relationships with these friendly Arab countries like Bahrain, like the UAE, and also Saudi Arabia. I would add, we've been reporting on some of the nefarious actions of Qatar that is really supporting Hamas right now, has actually given billions of dollars to Hamas through the years. Part of why they've been able to build this network of tunnels throughout the Gaza Strip. Somebody described the Gaza Strip as a military base with civilians living in it, or the largest terror base in the world. Mm. So I think those relationships with people like Bahrain need to be enhanced and encouraged. And I think we need to recognize perhaps who our allies are in the region and keep supporting them.
Chris, we just truly thank you so much for your analysis, your insights, being in Israel and spending, you know, several decades in the region. It is truly very informative and inspiring and challenging us all to be more concerned about what's happening in Israel and to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us on America's Roundtable.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Natasha. Thank you, Joe.
This is America's Roundtable from Washington, D.C., an initiative of the U.S.-based think tank International Leaders Summit in partnership with Lancer Broadcasting Corporation and SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Thank you for joining us on America's Roundtable. I'm Joe Ladin-Sami, your co-host, joined by economist Natasha Sardorj, co-founder of International Leaders Summit and the Jerusalem Leaders Summit.
America's Roundtable guests include leading voices from business, government, media, energy, technology, healthcare, and the broad policy arena. Subscribe to America's Roundtable on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. Visit America's Roundtable at americasrt.com. americasrt.com. Follow us on Facebook, America's Roundtable, and Twitter at americasrt. We invite donors and advertisers to reach us by visiting our website, americasrt.com.